So today we are pleased to have the last episode of season one of the Waterfowl Podcast. This is Sarah Waterfowl Fowler. This is a Green Antler production, and Ella Young is a young woman I met at the May 8th Youth Climate Forum. So I met her virtually, never in real life, but I feel like you got a lot going on, and I'd love for you to tell me about some of the things that you're working on, because as like a youth climate activist, among other things.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I have personally taken a step back from organizing for the time being, just because it's very, very taxing on mental health, and I constantly push other folks to do that, and I realized I was not taking those actions myself. So I don't want to take credit for any of the climate action that's happening right now, because that's not my organizing. But did you want to know about like previous stuff that's happening, plans for the future, the strike that's happening right now?
Yeah, well, I know that I noticed, because I sort of wrote down some of the things that you've got on your linked tree, because I don't have a linked tree, so I'm learning.
Yeah,
I'm learning a lot about the things that people do when they're sort of like connecting, right? You know,
yeah,
and I mean, you have the famine in Yemen on there. You have murdered and missing Indigenous women, Black Lives Matter, Asian racism, anti-Asian racism, and I wanted to ask you. I guess this is something that you'll know about, but I haven't researched. Justice for Bernie Edwards, the Flower Man. What's that about?
That was a case in the States where a Black man was shot and killed by the police, which was, you know, unfortunately uncommon, or very common.
Yeah.
But that was a very, very prominent case because there was no, from my understanding, there was no evidence of previous violence or a background or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it, you know,
so it was
really
pretty
important.
Unmeditated, right? Like it was.
Yes, completely unmeditated.
Yeah. It's okay.
My sister just walked in, so I'm trying to keep things quiet.
Yeah, I just put my kids to bed, but they might be noisy, so that's how it goes, right?
That happens.
Yeah, we have to roll with the punches of our lives. Yeah.
Yes, it's become reality now.
It is. Well, and we all work from home now, and that's really strange. I don't know what other kind of work you're working on, or if you're in school. But I feel like I'm interested to know what interests you. I mean, you can talk about anything you want.
Do you have guiding questions? Is there anything you want to know?
Sure. Well,
I'm not going to stop talking.
One of my guiding questions, I guess, is something I ask a few people is, what's the theme of your week? You know, like, what's this week been like for you?
Right. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and it's a really good question. I think like many others during the pandemic, and I'm very, very open about it, I've been struggling with mental health. And it's very, very scary because there's obviously a history of that for everyone. For myself, it's in, kind of embedded within my family. But I recently was doing a workout and I was talking to a woman at the gym. I asked if she needed to be spotted because she was lifting something quite heavy and I didn't want her to injure herself. And we got just talking, and she was telling me about how she was also struggling with her mental health. And a big thing for her was taking it day by day and sort of realizing that, you know, every day is, as corny as it's going to sound, this gift that's kind of given to you. You know, that's why it's called the present, and just seizing that and taking advantage of that and being grateful for that and living it to the fullest, and also recognizing the privilege I have to be able to look at life that way. With the privilege I have that I don't have to worry, you know, about whether or not I'm going to have clean drinking water, which is a huge issue in Indigenous communities, and whether or not, you know, the climate crisis, there's no hiding from it, but with environmental racism and all that, I'm very, very lucky that I live in Canada and it's not necessarily as prominent as it is in other countries.
Yeah. Well, and mental health struggles, you know, it's always a one day at a time, you know, that's like one of the AA slogans that I know from my own family's like struggle with presence and sobriety and like, yeah, being present, like you said, right? Like it can be really easy to get ahead of yourself or behind yourself and like reflect on like, you know, the traumas that we have, right? You know, I think you're right about having a privileged position. It's important for us to sort of be grateful for that, right? You know, like, I got my clean drinking water right here, and I know how valuable it is, right? You know, and I know how challenging it is for so many, you know, like, I know that that's one of the things that I always campaign about, because, you know, it starts with water, right? Like, I mean, from a lot, like, in BC, forest fires, water shortages, right? You know, and farmers not being able to access water. And one of the things that we noticed this year in the fire season in British Columbia was that people were coming to the coast because there were fires there, but then there was, like, water shortages. Do they ever have those here, like, where you can't water your grass, or where it's, like, alternating days?
We have water shortages, pardon me, and then they put fire bans as well.
Yeah.
And all of these sort of restrictions in place about what you can and cannot do with your water, and, you know, it's very scary, but it's also the reality for so many people on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I think what's become very, very evident recently is that there is no hiding from the climate crisis. You've seen, you know, the Gulf of Mexico has been fire. Gulf of Mexico is on fire. Cities in Pakistan have reached temperatures hotter than the human body can withstand. Buildings along the Miami coast are collapsing. This isn't a drill, you know, and you've got these people who, I think it's the top 1%, you know, making all that money and at the price of our lives. There is no hiding from it, and it's only a matter of time until these videos that you see of these wildfires, these floods, these catastrophic events on your phone are actually being filmed by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember in 2018 there was a forest fire in Tasas. It was above on the mountainside, and it was a source of great anxiety for people, right? I mean, just be able to see the plume of smoke from your house, and it wasn't like somebody else's problem, right? It was ours. And also too, in that instance, there's a lot of people thinking about, like, okay, well, if we do, like, pragmatically, like, if we do have to evacuate our town, there's only one road in and one road out, so that makes it stressful, right? It's like a bottleneck, right? And you're right. I mean, California, Greece, you know, it's happening everywhere, and there is no hiding from it, and there is no getting away from it. You know, wherever you think you're gonna go, it's gonna be there too. And that's a lot, you know, and that's a lot to put on the mental health of young people, right? That was a huge part of the talk that we were at, and about how the climate grief is heavy and sort of, you know, how do we make it so that we can feel like something I know my friend says, action dispels despair, you know, and I feel like I tell myself that to, like, sort of try to feel less despair sometimes, I guess, right?
No, and I think, you know, it's completely valid, and there's this massive stigma around mental health, but at the end of the day, everything you're feeling is real and it's valid. And even during COVID, I mean, you're grieving the loss of your normal, you're grieving the loss of what your life used to be, and the same thing applies to climate anxiety, is you're grieving the loss of your future.
Yeah.
We as youth, and anyone in the climate movement really, but it's very, very prominent on youth because we are the next generation,
mm-hmm.
is that we quite literally got the weight of the world on our shoulders. You know, I didn't want to give up my teenage years fighting for a chance of living. I didn't want to throw away everything that teenagehood is supposed to be in order for the slight chance of a future, but it's not really that much of a choice at the end of the day. It's not for fun, and I think that's, you know, a lot we hear all of these youth not so much complaining, but more expressing and destigmatizing how much anxiety we feel around it. And you've got all these adults coming at you saying, well, it's a choice, it's volunteer work. It's not a choice.
Mm-hmm.
An instinct to survive is one of the strongest, and that's really what we're doing right now, is we're fighting to survive.
Mm-hmm. So the Fridays for the Future, that's, you know, like Extinction Rebellion. There's lots of different names, I guess.
Yeah, there's lots of different ones. They all have different pillars. A few of them are political, so it really depends on where you stand politically and your morals and all that, depending on which one you choose to organize and work with and mobilize on behalf of. But it's all at the end of the day fighting for a similar outcome.
Well, and for life to, like you said, instinct to survive, it's for drinking water, breathable air, temperatures that the human body can sustain. That's,
we are losing everything that we need to survive.
Mm-hmm. I know. And there's been almost 900 arrests at Fairy Creek.
Yes, yeah, that's another big thing, right? Is, the amount of privilege that I, myself, and so many other white organizers have of being able to put ourselves at the forefront of those protests and not fearing for our lives is something that goes so unrecognized in this movement, because it is predominantly white, and we stress this a lot in the movement, is that it's a privilege to be able to kind of look forward and worry about your future rather than worrying about surviving in this system today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just how quaint it is, I guess, right? To worry about the boot on your neck tomorrow because the boot on your neck isn't there today, right? I mean, it just blows my mind how heavy and deep it all is when you just have it so right and so aware, I feel I guess when I was a teenager, there was still room for denial, right? And now that I'm not a teenager anymore, I guess it feels like the other youth person who I met, who was also on this podcast, he said, kicking the can to the future of doom. And I feel like that is a huge, weight borne by people, right? The people who don't know about it, people who do know about it, people who are putting themselves on the line to make discussions about, as in politics, modernized forestry policy. That's sort of what's happening with Fairy Creek, but it's definitely about a lot of other things too, right? I mean, we've talked about some global things, and it is one world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you've spoken about climate denial and all that, and the climate denial, and that's obviously still very, very present. You look at the Conservative Party, they voted against it, not unanimously, but majority. Mm-hmm. But one of the biggest enemies right now is climate delay as well, because you see, like I said, you see these catastrophic videos through your phone, oceans on fire, entire shorelines and buildings collapsing. Sorry, my dog's very enthusiastic about someone coming home. Temperatures rising hotter than the human body can withstand, but it's through someone else's phone. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize how prominent it is, and it's only a matter of time until you're reporting.
Well, and we are by having there's not a lot of difference between people, in one world, we're all on the front lines of the climate catastrophe, right? It's definitely something to say that, I remember when the forest fires were only in California, and then there was Lytton burning down this year, right? So it's getting closer and closer, and I think, delay, good one on that.
I'd say.
Yeah, it's... Holy, I mean, what kind of things do you do to feel hopeful?
That's a really good question.
You take your dog for a walk, right?
I take my dog for a walk, yeah. Apparently not enough.
No, a lot of dogs like to be up.
That is very affirming for me is that there are two sides of the climate crisis, obviously. There's the side of despair, like your previous guest said, kicking the can. Yeah. Into the despair, and then also kind of this, the intricacy of the solutions. So you can be absolutely terrified by the climate crisis, mortified, you don't know what's going to happen, and there is that level of uncertainty because, as far as we know, no one can see into the future, but you can also fall in love with the beauty and the intricacy of those solutions and the creativity surrounding it all, and knowing that there is this entire movement of young people like yourself and even older people and those allies alongside you that we're all fighting. Like you mentioned, we are all being affected by this. It's a matter of time until life or death situation, but we're well on our way there. And there's just this sort of amazing power in the movement that's kind of come to light lately, because it hasn't always been this prominent. It's only been in the past few years since we've sort of really recognized the urgency of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just like how, I don't know, I can only think of it from like a labor union perspective, where it's like the solidarity, where like people know that their survival is on the line, so there's no need to argue anymore, right? You know, so it's like debate is over, action is required.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you to take deep breaths and all this, because at the end of the day, your life is on the line. It's stressful. It's understandable to be anxious about that.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's not so much climate denial anymore. It's quite evident that the climate crisis is here. It's literally in some of our own cities, but climate delay. People don't realize. They realize the situation is serious, but they don't realize the urgency of it.
Hmm. Definitely. So, I guess urgent equals, it gets us into this, what can we do, right? You know, like, how can we, I feel, since I've gotten in government, that I can't do anything anymore, and and maybe that was because I come from a bit more of an activist background, where there is sort of organizing and now sort of the policy or the bureaucracy, it's just like made things more delayed, more process driven. Another guest I had on the podcast this season was a mayor of Inuvik, and she was talking about how it took 10 years for them to try to get through the red tape to get a wind turbine. And since I've been here in Ontario, where I'm visiting, I've seen a lot of wind turbines on farmland since I've got back, because I used to live here and they used to not be there, you know. Now there, it's an improvement, you know. I come back and I see like infrastructure investment in green tech or clean energy or something like that, you know. And so I tried to actually, I saw a charging station, the first one I ever saw recently on this trip. And it seems so crazy to think that, you know, it's not being sort of rolled out on a bigger scale, but also that, you know, there wasn't a lot of people charging up at them. It's maybe like a slow thing to adopt, and how hard it is to change minds, right? You know, and how, a well-worn route or rut, you know, where you just like don't know you have any other options besides the options that you see right in front of you. And that's not really a question. But yeah. I'd love for you to talk. I know that there's a big wind turbine. I remember the one that's like exhibition that's like on the waterfront there, right? And it's, I remember too when they got some in Alberta, in like around Calgary, and they were like, oh, look, we're diversified, you know? And I was like, okay, moving forward, you know?
Not enough, yeah. I think something that I stretch a lot, because it's definitely impacted the way I look at this crisis recently, is you focus a lot when you first start environmentalism. You kind of fall into this very, the word I'm looking for, a kind of unproductive method of viewing the climate crisis and those solutions. And like I said, you know, it's terrifying, it's a complex, and it's an intersectional issue. So those solutions, they have to be creative, and that's part of the beautiful thing about it. But what's very stretched is the individual carbon footprint. You know, reduce your carbon footprint, eat less meat, use less water and all that. And that's incredible, but the idea of a carbon footprint in itself was kind of pushed by BP oil. And for anyone listening who doesn't know what BP Oil is, it's a massive oil company who is part of the 100 corporations that make up for 70% of global carbon emissions. And so it's absolutely great you take those individual actions. You show that you, as a citizen, are willing to take those steps, but there's no solving this crisis that's so interconnected to the very system that we live in, the very system that's proceeding this crisis forward and letting it move forward without change of that system and pushing for that change from politicians. You know, I think there is a big ego factor that plays into politics, and it can kind of be disguised as a bit of a game, but at the end of the day, like I said, the ego does play a big part, and if there's enough pressure on politicians to make that system change, it's going to happen because they want to stay in office.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about, like, there's a huge juggernaut of support behind the system status quo. So even the most, like, people who get elected who want to see, you know, change, I quickly realized that, like, there's more of a vested interest in staying things the same than there are for changing. You know, the changing is the unpopular opinion in a way.
Yeah,
right.
And you know? COVID, that's really, really been pushed as well, because, you know, you get this unprecedented time and all people want to go back to normal. Well, guess what? Normal was a crisis.
Yeah.
Normal was what led us here. Okay. And that same thing applies for the climate action. You saw during the first lockdown that nature reclaiming things. At the end of the day, you're not winning a fight with nature. She's going to win every single time, and she's mad right now, as are the youth, right? And when you've got that kind of mass exploitation of the planet and those unsustainable resources, you're not winning in that fight. You keep going, and at the rate we're going, it's game over unless there's change, and that needs to be on a systemic level. Pushing people to take shorter showers, to, you know, eat less meat, it's just gaslighting that situation. Those kids timing their showers for 5 minutes, they're not responsible for those carbon emissions. They're not responsible for the mass extinction heading our way. It's that exploitation, and at the end of the day, it's money. It's all in the money.
Mm-hmm. You know it. And it's, you know, like you said, like, I remember when I was involved with Greenpeace, when I lived in Toronto, it was Esso, it wasn't BP. It was, like, the main thing. Like, oh, if you, like, switch going from one gas station to the next, then that's, like, you know, it seems, to me, one and the same, in the sense that it's sort of just like, there also was like a campaign about, like, this tuna fish is dolphin friendly, you know, like this one is not, right? You know, and it was sort of just like,
tuna purchases are great, but I tell you right now, they're not going to solve the climate crisis.
Yeah. Well, and your 5 minute shower, it's not an individual thing, right? These are like collective, profit driven, you know, like, global industries, and no
exactly.
amount of us eating less meat is going to equate to what is happening.
Not at all. Discouraging individual actions, I think they're amazing, but it needs to be a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. You've got to show yourself that you are willing to take those steps and to make that change, because I know we all want to go back to normal, but like I said, normal is a crisis. We go back there and it's game over, it's end game. But we can't just rely on those individuals who are not responsible for the 70% of global carbon emissions either. Because even if every individual took those small actions and we still let those mass corporations proceed, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, fuel and energy, and we all rely on these things, right? You know, I know that I really get overwhelmed by everything that has happened in my lifetime. And then I think about how my grandpa used to say that the best invention of his life was the automatic coal logger, because he didn't have to get up in the middle of the night to shovel coal into the coal stove that kept the family house warm, right? You know? And so, like, I think about automation and how it's, like, changed over my lifetime, and how, like, my grandpa's was like, oh, this robot is, like, saving me from getting up in the morning. And, like, I have two robots going on right now, you know, like, and that's not even the one, like, that's like old tech, like a wristwatch where it, like, has hands, right? You know, it's, I guess I just think about, like, how the the tech world has no, there's no, it, like, it's not, so there's the finite earth, and that's where we mine to make, like, the lithium in the phones and blah, 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 right? You know, the quartz in my watch. But then there's, like, the unfinite world of the internet, right? Which, we're in it now. We can't get out, right? Like, I mean, I don't know a lot about new things like that. Like, I just joined Twitter when I got elected. So it was something that I was like, okay, I guess these are the tools that I have at my disposal and I'm trying to learn these new media, right? But I also wonder about how it's like the master's tools in the master's house. Do you know what I'm saying when I say that? You know, now I'm like using the tools that I saw sort of like as like part of the thing that was the problem. You know what I mean? And it's like you said, at the first stage of environmentalism, you're in an unproductive place, you know? And I guess maybe that's true for politics also. Like, it's really...
Oh, absolutely is.
Maybe there'll be a time when I can be more productive, but I'm not really sure how to, like, move forward with things and, like, to be... Yeah, effective or successful with it, because in a lot of ways it just feels like it's set up to fail, right? You know, and maybe that's just really cynical and hard to understand that, like, it's always been changing the whole time, you know, like human culture and, you know, belief systems and the ways that we interact with each other and, you know, oral traditions. And this is still oral, you know, now it's just like 2.0, right? You know? Yeah.
I mean, I've been in this movement for years now, and something that I had to do a lot of was unlearning. I had to do a lot of learning. I had to do a lot of educating. The school system does not educate you on this, nor the urgency of it. But a lot of unlearning as well, and unlearning these kind of ideas. And like I said, the responsibility of a carbon footprint and all this that's put on top of you, like, yeah, you yourself are responsible for millions of people dying from the climate crisis. And that's not the case at all. And sort of recognizing that and going easy on yourself. And I'm by no means an expert in this situation. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what to do and what not to do, because at the end of the day, there is no right way or wrong way to kind of take that action. That being said, you said something along the lines of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you feel like you're kind of, it felt like you're made to set up or mess up and you can't really win in this game, right? And I think that a lot of what's happening right now in making that mass profit is a bit of a game. And those individuals and the consumers, we're not the ones making that profit. We're not the ones, you know, who are benefiting off of our exploitation and all of that. It's that 1%. Mm-hmm. But another world is possible. And that's what they want us to believe that it's not. They want us to believe that we just have to sit there and we have to be complicit and we got to keep letting them make millions of dollars while what they're doing is, quite frankly, murder. Thousands of people die from the climate crisis and they're sitting there in their ivory towers just counting money, just counting those bills. But there's another way. It is possible. You push for that change. You kind of unlearn all these ideas that have been put in your head that you have to be quiet, you have to be complicit. You know, I learned to be an activist and I learned to be a young woman as well by what everything the world taught me. You know, it taught me to sit down, so I stood up. It taught me to be quiet, so I spoke. And going against everything that's kind of pushed on you is really what's going to make change in the long run. I'm not saying going around and commit felonies and all this and ignore the law, like, that's not a good idea. But everything that's pushed on you to allow systems of oppression to continue, go against it. Because if you sit there and you let those systems of oppression continue and you're complicit in them, they're just going to keep going as well.
Yeah, well, and if you had told me that when I got elected that hugs and handshakes would be illegal, you know, I wouldn't have believed you, you know, because I had no frame of reference for what we're going through now as, like, a global world, right? You know, and like you said too, like, I can't believe that there's people protesting outside hospitals, but this is happening. And I can understand, you know, people are afraid of coercion. Everybody wants to feel like they have free choice. Like you said, go against, you know, like I feel like I know that song well. And I don't know. I guess I just, I always think about the salmon swimming upstream, you know, like, and how hard that is, you know, and how much it's like a whole lifetime of muscle swimming around the ocean, trying to sort of do this like big push to spawn or like to, you know, cause like it's also too about like giving birth to ideas, movements, you know, like relationships, friendships, you know, like I feel like there's definitely a lot of, good that comes from pushing against systems of oppression. So thank you for doing that work, because I know that it's not easy. And I know too that, you know, laws that are unjust, you know, there's a lot of that going around now, you know, like I feel like we could talk about the space race for the millionaires. I feel like we could talk about Texas, right? Like I feel like we could talk about either of those things and feel like, well, that's not us, right? That's, I don't know. I mean, maybe it is, but both of those are us, you know? Like, I'm trying to, myself, feel like I can relate to anyone, and I can't really relate to trying to get to space, because I'm pretty committed to staying on this planet and, yeah, like, feeling yeah. like an earthling, and, like, and a lot of it is a huge amount of grief, and a lot of it is a huge amount of, hope that comes through connection with people, right? With like friends, or, you know, like, I don't know. I know that I definitely met a lot of my friends in, activist circles or under bridges, or, you know, like in jail. I mean, I think that, it's important to know that there's like, I don't know. I just think about all the people whose shoulders on which we stand, that are, you know, like civil disobedience, that are, you know, like trying to move forward the laws as they are in the land, and the ways that people, it's the hearts and minds of people, right? You know, like I always try to think about how someone feels so that I can better connect with them in order to get them to like sort of not like a more ecological, because like, again, I don't think it's about individual things. I think it's about ideological things, right? So we're in the federal election now, and we're trying to elect a new prime minister or not, right? You know, depending on how people vote. And I think too that with COVID has made, there's a lot of like distrust, right? There's like general, I've heard it said that there were gaps and now we're more aware of them. You know, people living in parks, I've seen a sign that said, don't evict my neighbors in tents, you know? And I feel like there's definitely a lot of close to the grain now more than before, right? Like there's just a lot more like social challenges. I know that a lot of different industries have shut down or changed, and people having to like pivot into less than ideal circumstances, right?
Yeah, I think it's definitely become very, very evident during COVID. There's that need for that, and also, you know, that idea of your worth, your productivity has been pushed onto you, which, you know, is quite frankly ridiculous. You are worth so much more than your productivity and what you can or cannot contribute to the capitalist system. But like you were saying, even moving through our life without that rest and that healing, that love, it leaves you vulnerable to replicating those systems of oppression, which is the same system, you know, convincing you that you've got to help it and lift it and all of that. And so I think it's a really beautiful thing, being able to learn and also unlearn that. And being in that process together as well, because this is an unprecedented time. We're all moving through it together. We're all learning together, and being able to uplift one another as well. It just, it kind of comes into play in everything we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like, just the idea of like moving past the idea that our lives are like quantifiable with like the amount of like sweat equity that we can give to each other, right? You know,
yeah,
like,
well, it's a big issue in the climate crisis as well, right? Is that, you know, so many of these people, we talk about green jobs and the Green New Deal and all that, and all of these jobs in the fossil fuel industry. And I know that a lot of fossil fuel workers always get blamed for the climate crisis, but they're not the ones making those big calls. They're not the ones making those decisions. And we were talking about controversial issues, you look at the space race, for example, and those billionaires trying to race to space and find a safe haven from the crisis they've created. It's going to end up being the same thing as the COVID vaccine, you know? They destroy this planet, they're out, we're left here to die.
Yeah. And, I mean, it just feels to me like how foolish they are to think that they can get away from it. Like you said, she'll always win, right? You know, and
she's gonna win every single time. There's no away from it.
It's, I guess that's one like feel good of, you know, is that like we'll all get our comeuppance in the end, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
And like, I guess that's like a, I don't know, the idea that there is a place such as a way that you can escape to, right? You know, that is a falsehood, right? You know, and that is, you know, it's not space. It's not like, I remember 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That was like a thing when I was a kid where it was like under sea bubbles, like, but space, but like under the ocean, right? You know?
That's pretty fun.
Well, you know, it's, it seemed cool at the time because they were like building gardens on the seabed and blah, blah, blah. And we still do that as like a global species, right? Like I've heard a lot of good things about seaweed, and I feel like, oh yeah, if we can grow seaweed, then we can feed it to cows and they'll fart less methane. And it seems like a win, 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 but it's also like a lot of going along the same line of thinking in a way, you know, like farming our way out of it, right? But I look for these ways of hope and these like ways that we can like be more effective and strategic with things. But yeah, I really feel like I am easily controversial, and I want to talk about things that other people maybe, you know, have the better judgment to stay away from. But I think that, like, I don't know, since I was younger, I remember being, you know, in science class and really understanding that compost and like sort of the like the base level of earthiness and like the worms and stuff were what we were, you know? And I try to think about human species as not like a dog eat dog sort of thing, but more of like, you know, the ants working together or the bees having a collective goal and like trying to see like ways in nature that it's not all like praying mantis or like lion cubs and stuff like that, you know, but it is that too. But I want to see how we are sort of a more like a species that can use forethought, you know, and that can see ahead of the curves, right? You know, and can say, yeah, I don't think that the earth is flat, you know, and like just have these crazy ideas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no doubting that our intelligence is beyond the other animals here, but like I said, it's one of the really beautiful things about being in the climate movement and kind of looking at these intricate and creative solutions is that our DNA is embedded into the earth. We are everything else that walks amongst it, and there's so many beautiful examples of just by just observing nature and kind of seeing that, you know, they live in this sustainable way, and it's possible for us too. We don't have, there is another option, there, another world is possible. We don't have to be stuck in this sort of system where we just replicate that oppression. We work and we work and we work, and in the process destroy everything around us.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed talking with you today, but I think that I have no more questions, or, you know, I would like to go into a new school year, September, or, you know, a new, you know, with the end of 2021 and the beginning of 2022, and I want to see, you know, some more actual, like, you know, targets being met from, like, a global scale. But also, like, I feel like every day is a small win, you know, and every day we're, like, just trying to find ways to stay human and to have that, like, small, simple pleasures, the joy that, like, we can have in a glass of water, or, you know, a shared meal, or a minute discussion, you know, like, the ways that, that it is this, like, dance that we're dancing, right? You know, and it's, and I like what you said. I think I'm gonna try to, the ego of politics, right?
That's a big one.
Yeah, it's so big. I never thought I would make a podcast where I just talk to whoever or myself, and I feel like embracing that is making me better at what I'm doing, because I'm hearing from all sorts of different kinds of people, but I'm also sort of feeding that wolf that I feel like is part of my shade or something, you know? And I guess I just, like, want to be better because I can, you know, but also crazy, you know, but also, you know, that it's just like, it's almost to me like the new ways are the old ways, you know, and I think that for me, that means like a lot of things, like trying to grow my own food and do these like simple things that can like really connect me to the ground and really like make me feel like I am a part of this earthly life for however long I get, you know, but it's a struggle. So keep going and, you know, find some joy in your day and your night. And, you know, I thought it was hard to be a teenager in my environmental crisis in the 80s with acid rain, you know, and I know now that things have become so much more volatile in the world, you know, and that it's a way, like you said, replicating the cycles, right? So we're cycle breakers and we're, you know, going against the grain, and we're trying to find our way in the world. Stand up, speak out. Thanks so much, Ella.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Great.
I really enjoyed your talk. Thanks a lot for your time.
Good afternoon. You're talking to you too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you have a good one.
All right, bye.
Stay strong. Mm-hmm.